Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Oregon Governor Kate Brown has paused her state's reopening plans by 1 week as coronavirus cases there reached a new 7-day high. Oregon is one of at least 7 states seeing an uptick in COVID-19 cases as much of the country relaxes lockdown measures. Still, as people return slowly to normal life, many are wondering which everyday activities are safe to resume and what might be too risky. Let's ask Mercedes Carnathan. She's a professor of epidemiology at Northwestern University. And Mercedes, many of us want to get together with friends and family after months of staying apart. What is the best way to do that? And is it okay if it's outside and there's no physical contact?
Yes. You know, I think one of the best ways to think about it is an emphasis on the term physical distancing rather than social distancing. As you point out, gatherings that take place outside where there's fresh air circulation and plenty of space are considered somewhat safer than gatherings that are inside in enclosed rooms. And even when we're outside with our friends and our loved ones, this isn't the time, unfortunately, to run up and give a big hug, even though we're so happy to see one another after such a long shut-in period. If we're able to maintain these freedoms and be able to be outside and see our friends, we have to respect certain parameters that require physical distancing. And that includes, where possible, wearing face masks so that we have the pleasure of at least speaking face to face with someone, but not sharing respiratory droplets, which we know to be the most common way that the virus is transmitted between individuals.
You mentioned small gatherings. Does it matter the size of the gathering if it's fewer than 10 people or if it's a huge gathering in someone's backyard?
Right now, current recommendations in many states, including the state where I am in, requests gatherings of 10 people or less. And why that number is important is in part due to space. And then there's the statistical reason. If we think that, say, for example, in a given area at a given time, there's a 5% prevalence of COVID-19 in the community, that would mean that in a group of 100, theoretically, there could be 5 infected people. If you cut that group down to 10 people, your likelihood of running into those 5 infected people goes down tenfold. So part of it is purely a numbers game. If 2 out of 100 are infected, your probability of finding those 2 is greater in a larger group.
Well, Mercedes, this makes me think, though, about flying. I mean, people are doing it, but when do you think it will be safe to travel again?
You know, the question of safety is really one of risk. So there are risks every time you step outside your door. There are very good reasons why somebody has to fly on an airplane, and they should take all of the precautions they can to lower their risk. And that includes wearing personal protective equipment and maintaining the utmost hygiene, cleaning the space that you're in, limiting your interaction with people to the extent that you can. You know, I think it's just an issue of knowing what your priorities are. What are you flying to go do? You know, are you getting on an airplane to then go visit a potentially vulnerable friend or relative? That might be a decision that where the risk outweighs the reward.
Yeah. You know, there was a congressional hearing just this week looking at what the fall might look like for school children. Do you think it will be advisable for kids to go back to school? I know it's a $1 million question, but it's one that we all want answers to.
Yes, I have school-aged children myself, aged 5 and 7. And so I'm certainly eager to see how we can mitigate the risks while experiencing what we know to be the benefits of an educational setting. And so, unfortunately, the questions about safety of opening schools really are very individual. They are individual at the community level, depending on what the background burden of COVID-19 is in a given community. For example, opening a school in an area where the overall prevalence looks to be very low, less than 1%, mm-hmm. is a very different scenario than opening it where there are estimates of 10% of the community being exposed already to COVID. So these are difficult decisions that don't come without risk. And I think those decisions need to really be carefully weighed against the potential downsides from a social perspective of keeping children out of school, and who is likely to be harmed the most by those decisions to continue to keep children out of school, and who is likely to be harmed by the decisions to send children to school.
I want to ask you about masks. So we're reading about health officials in Switzerland not recommending their citizens wear masks, saying that they promote a false sense of security and might actually encourage people to then engage in riskier behavior. Is there any truth to that?
That's an interesting point to consider. Our current recommendations here in the United States are for individuals to wear masks in settings in which they are unable to socially or physically distance themselves. In my opinion, I see less risk to wearing masks than the risk of not wearing masks. To me, I think the false sense of security may come into when you consider how vulnerable an individual is. So somebody with a lot of risk factors or characteristics that we see as associated with worse outcomes from COVID, they may decide that wearing a mask is not going to be adequate protection. And for that individual, the risk may outweigh the benefit of being able to interact in public.
I went to an appointment this week. Okay, so I'm going to divulge something personal here. I went to get my hair done, Mercedes. I had to get color. Right. But everyone wore a mask. And as I was driving home, I was thinking about the risk that I had just taken. But then I thought about the fact that I could go get a test right away if I wanted to. And I was wondering if that is a mechanism for us curbing the spread, making certain if we are in situations where we believe it's been risky, if we take those steps, could we mitigate it in that way?
You know, I like your line of thought there. I think the benefit of testing is so that we know what the burden of disease is in a given community. All we know right now is the tip of the iceberg, because only people with symptoms are being tested, and we're counting people who end up in the hospital or have terrible outcomes. If we find out through random testing, and that's really what we need, that tells us a lot about what the background risk is of community transmission. But to get your hair done in a state where it appears that there have been 1,000 cases total over the course of 3 months is certainly a lower risk scenario than having your hair done in a state where there have been 200,000 cases, because your likelihood, again, of running into an individual who has the disease is much higher in a state and an area where there's a higher burden of disease.
Do you think these basic precautions, like we've been talking about, are enough? Are you confident we won't see a surge in cases as states reopen, as long as people wear masks and self-quarantine if they're sick?
If I had the answer to that question, I believe I would be on stage receiving an award.
That's right.
I will say that what our data are showing us right now as states are reopening is that we are seeing increases in the transmission of COVID-19. What we don't know is whether or not those new individuals who are being infected are taking precautions such as wearing masks. And I will say, as I consider my hopefulness for this, is that we will find that the proper use of personal protective equipment by a large portion of the population will slow the transmission of COVID-19, because this disease is not going to go away quickly. And we all feel an urgency to return to some semblance of normal, although we are going to be in a post-COVID normal, and perhaps that post-COVID normal is just going to need to be masks so that we can keep the transmission levels low and not overburden our hospital system.
That's Mercedes Carnathan. She's a professor of epidemiology and vice chair of the Department of Preventative Medicine at Northwestern University. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.